Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
The God of Mischief is back and better than ever.
Loki.
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 Loki. Wow. Great to see you again.
Critics agree Loki Season 2 is
marvelous.
Great.
And it's finally here.
How much do you know?
Let's assume I don't know much.
A mind-bending adventure. Spectacularly cinematic.
I've been waiting for a moment like this.
It surpasses all expectations.
A little over the top, don't you think?
I thought it was spot on.
Loki Season 2. Now streaming only on Disney Plus.
You are listening to Absent Minded, brought to you by Habs Eyes on the Prize.com.
And we're back with number 2 of the top 25 under 25, and we're joined by none other than Marc Dumont from Montreal Canadiens. It says a lot saying that. I think it's great, Marc. Thank you for doing this.
Thanks for having me on, guys. Although I noticed last year you got me on for the number 1, and now I'm dropping to number 2 in the podcast. That's
well, we got you on the whole list last year, right?
So yeah, no, you are right. Yeah, actually, you know, it's funny because I was listening. I went back and I listened to it just to see what we were kind of saying there, and we were debating whether Kotkaniemi or Suzuki would be number 1 this year. And you know, the guy that made the biggest push, even though he finished second in your vote, was the guy we're going to talk about, and that's Cole Caulfield.
And let's face it, you made an amazing interview with Cole Caulfield there last fall, I think it was, when he joined college.
When he was going to Wisconsin. Yeah, it was going into year 2 with Wisconsin. Yeah, I had a... You know what's funny, guys? He's you know, he comes off as a little bit of like a hockey bro, like most of these guys do. He's a hockey nerd. You know, before we get into the specifics, there are very few players in around the world, and we can say he's an NHL player now, but that study as much tape as Cole Caulfield. And I think that speaks to his desire to want to be elite. You know, all he's ever been told his entire life was that this guy can't compete. You're too small. You depend on Hughes. You only score in the power play. You only score because the schedule's easy. Well, I mean, this guy has dominated at every level, and it's not just because he has that elite talent. Yeah, it is, but he has a focus on improving himself. So we had a tiny taste of Cole Caulfield, and the great news is there's 20 years left, 20 years left to see what he can do in the NHL.
Hopefully he doesn't get oversheated.
I was just going to say that. Yeah.
Well, when's this podcast coming out?
In 2 weeks time, more or less. So we're now.
Okay.
We're
so then let's record 2. Okay. Oh my God. I can't believe the Habs let him walk. What a crazy decision. Oh my God. I can't believe the Habs matched the offer sheet. What a crazy decision. All right, cool. We're done. We can move on from that.
Yeah, no, it's not to drag that one out too long, but yeah, Caulfield, I think
they will
everyone expected him to
very quickly. And I'll tell you this right now, they're not going to, you know, obviously when you hit a certain level of talent, and I'm not trying to disparage Kotkaniemi, but guys like Suzuki and Caulfield, it won't be a debate. And as I'm not trying to disparage Kotkaniemi here, it's just that we know that they have that elite talent, which we haven't seen in Kotkaniemi. So those guys, trust me, will be signed up long before an offer sheet. Hopefully, you know, hopefully no one's dragging this up in a couple of years and then dunking on me, but I have no fear for those two guys whatsoever.
There are players that you will go into negotiations early, and there are players where you might drag out.
I wouldn't be surprised. What are we on Suzuki? This is the last year of the ELC, right?
Yeah,
I have to, actually, you know, it's funny because I only heard about the Kotkaniemi offer sheet like 2 days ago.
Yeah, you have been on a great vacation.
Oh, I've just been, you know, I love my job, and I'm not trying to disparage anything again. So I'm going to do my usual preamble and caveat before I say anything, but when you live and breathe hockey, and that's all you do all the time, and it's something that you love, but it turns into a job, it kind of loses its luster a little bit. So I can't spend all summer on Twitter arguing and not just arguing, but, you know, talking hockey. I need a break. So yeah, I just go camping. You know, I've seen lynx this summer. I've seen river otters, you know, this summer. I've seen bear. I've seen moose. I've, you know, there was a family of lynx in one of the spots that I went for a week. I had no internet either, which was amazing. It was just me, a campfire, a lot of bourbon. I sprained my ankle literally the first day as I was climbing up the hill. But I think the key here is you need to disconnect once in a while. And that's kind of what I did this summer. I just needed to get away from hockey because there are so much, like, hockey is so important. And we saw the healing power of it last summer, especially during the Canadiens playoff runs, like the smiles returned to Montreal. But I'm going to follow Ken Dryden's advice and take a break in the summers from here on in. And that way I will renew my love with it. Like, it's starting. Don't forget, guys, I went with the Athletic, and when they dumped me unceremoniously and then I jumped in with the Canadiens, it's been 2 years essentially that I didn't have a break. Right. So I decided, fuck this. I'm going to go fish and hunt and just kind of talk to myself. You know what I mean? Give my brain a minute to think and observe and kind of figure out where I want to go here next. So, like, I love my job with the Canadiens, but I'm loving my summer on the lake. So, yeah. What, so I just found out about the Cami 2 days ago, essentially. Sorry, what was that, Anton?
I was just going to ask, what did you hunt?
Well, there's right now, in season is deer, so we're just going to leave it at that. Yeah. But earlier, bear hunting just finished. So we tagged a couple bears. And now, wow, before anyone gets upset, there are too many bears in Canada right now. The government is encouraging us to hunt them. So that's just kind of called a cull. And this is all agreed upon by environmental experts, that there are too many deer and too many bear right now. And that's exactly what I hunted. I would never hunt the lynx, because I'd get hunted before he would hunt me. So I got, you know, a nice freezer full of meat right now.
All right. Dinner at Mark's tomorrow, right?
Yeah. For some bear. And actually I gave most of my bear. I'll tell you something right now, guys. It's mostly black bear here, right? Yeah. And it's not good. Like
I was gonna say, there can't be much fat on a black bear. Like, well, I mean, it's all muscle, right?
Well, here's the thing: it's all greasy muscle. So I don't know if you guys, I know that Patrick, you've had a lot of venison and wild meat. I'm pretty sure. I don't know about you, Anton, but there's some.
I haven't had bear like that.
Well, bear is greasy. Now, here's the best part. Here's the best part of it. You can go look this up in online. And I love how we started with Caulfield. Now we're talking about bears. But if they eat enough berries, they're actually marinating themselves. I'm not even joking. Like, if they're in a berry patch, if they're in like a blueberry patch for 3 weeks and you shoot them, which we use a crossbow to do, they taste like berries. It's like this greasy, but it's very greasy. Any hunter will tell you bear is very, very greasy. Me was more the challenge of hunting it with a crossbow that was, you know, you can kill anything with a gun from a mile away. I just wanted to see if I could take it out. And I know, again, people will say, oh, it's, you know, terrible, blah, 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 you hunted an animal. And I understand that. However, right now, there is an excess of bears in our forests. So this is all approved, maybe not by PETA, but
by the government. Bear,
yeah, well, I mean, I'll just say it this way. I think I love animals more than some other people that talk about how much they love animals. What I kill, I eat. I eat every little part of it, and the rest goes to a donation for shelters. So it's every piece of the animal gets used.
Indeed. Going back to
Caulfield, though, Mark. Yeah.
Right? I'm such a saint for killing a wild animal and then giving it away.
Going back to Caulfield, though.
Let's talk about hunting. So what do you guys hunt?
Yeah, well, grouse, actually, mostly.
Yeah. See, so that would be like our perdrix there. Yeah. I mean,
I'm still, my aim for the next 2 winters will be to get a capicali.
What's a capicali?
I'll show you. I don't know what it's called.
I was thinking capybara. I'm like, oh, you're getting a capybara? But you're going to hunt it?
We have it in Sweden, apparently.
Capicali, is it like a little deer?
No, it's the big black forest hen. More like a turkey size.
Okay. So
is it like a pheasant? No.
Yeah. Okay. Because there's pheasants, there's grouse, there's wild. But here, grouse opens in about 2 weeks, actually. And there's this place famous for it. It's called Mattawa. It's not Ottawa. It's Mattawa.
Is it a famous grouse? You mean?
Well, no, it's just a place where everyone goes. It's called Mattawa Days. Everyone goes, gets drunk, dances to a statue of this guy called Big Joe Mufara, who is actually French. His name is Gros Joe Montferrand, who is just this guy who fought with the English. And then they kill birds. So it's a very Ontario way of doing things. Is you get drunk, you celebrate a guy, and then you kill some birds. We'll stop swearing from here on in. So you were asking about Cole Caulfield, right, Patrick?
Yeah, let's go back. Cole Caulfield. your interview, you said he's a hockey nerd, and I've come across that with some of the different players I've interviewed as well. They really go deep into hockey, and doesn't really matter which league they are looking at. They're looking at certain skilled players that they like to watch. And did Caulfield mention which kind of players he's looking at? Is it shooters? Yeah. Is it playmakers? Is it
shooters? Now, what I found so fascinating, this is at the beginning of the year. So much has happened since then. I mean, he went on to, obviously, Hobie Baker, you know, they won the Big Ten. Bit of a disappointing elimination in the finals. But then he went, you know, NCAA, World Junior Medal, Stanley Cup final, you know. So much has happened since then. But what he said before is that he said, listen, I'm not going to score in the NHL with this shot. I need to improve it so it beats NHL player, NHL goalies. And when he said he looked at guys like Austin Matthews, and we had a in-depth conversation about Matthews, and what Caulfield said here is, because I always found it fascinating, this is the new breed of shooters, and it's going to become normal in a little bit, but for now, it's those guys that have the Matthews ability to drag the shot, like 3 inches max. But what that does is, for any nerds out there, is you're obviously changing the angle of attack significantly, right? And that makes life hell on goaltenders, because their brain is, is muscle memory at this point. You know that if a guy's shooting from a certain angle, you have to put yourself in a certain position, but he's masking that. And what I was talking about, the hands, I'm like, it's the hands. And he's like, look at his feet. Look at Austin Matthews' feet. And then I started looking at Austin Matthews' feet. And this is Caulfield telling me this. It's like, it's all in there. And you notice he does shift his feet. He opens it up to give a feint to look like he's going to shoot, then closes it down a little bit, readjusts, and opens again to have that power off the back foot. It's fascinating. And that's the kind of guy that Caulfield has been looking at. And even a guy like Joe Pavelski, who some people might be thinking, like, why were you even talking about Joe Pavelski? But he's one of the most underrated hockey players or goal scorers we've had in a little while. Like, this guy, you know, for a while he was putting up 40 goals almost every year. You know, he was getting up to 37, 38. So that's another guy that he emulates. And I think soon, the crazy part is, I bet you in 2-3 years, we're going to have guys talking about emulating Cole Caulfield. But for now, I think if you're going to take someone's shot, Austin Matthews is shot. I mean, you can't repeat. Connor McDavid does it on pure godlike talent, right? Like, his mother was Athena and his father was Zeus. But Austin Matthews, it's actually, there's a lot of technique involved. And that is more or less who he's emulating, along with a few other guys. But what he said is that, I'm watching how they're beating NHL goalies, and I want to beat NHL goalies like they are. So he goes into practice with his, I forget the name of the goalie, the Wisconsin goalie, Rabbi, anyways. And they practiced those shots. And it was Robbie Bedun, actually, Bedun. And he'd always ask him, like, how can I beat you better? How can I score on you better? And he kind of basically tweaked his shot. But all this to say is that Cole Caulfield watches the best. He emulates the best. He practices harder than anyone else I know. And he's never going to be satisfied with where he is. That's what I love about him. He's so focused on becoming elite that not only does he embrace the pressure, which, you know, I love that to him. He always says pressure is a privilege, but he's got the talent and the drive and the sustainability to get there. And when I say sustainability, I mean, like, guys, I don't want to compare him to the best in the world, but, you know, you talk about, let's say, a guy like Dennis Bergkamp, who would, you know, one of my favorite football players of all time. I mean, the reason he was so good is that he practiced, right? You talk about Tom Brady. The reason he's so good is he practiced, he never stopped, you know. Same thing with Mario Lemieux until, you know, the cancer in the back, but he still worked harder than anyone else. And I think that's something that Cole Caulfield has in him. He's not a legend, but man, does he have all the right tools and the right mental approach to become a legend if the cards fall right for him.
I have so many things to break down in this.
For my 3-minute, 5-minute rant there? Yeah.
Yeah. No, but first and foremost, I think in order to become great, you need to watch the great, and you need to have a little bit of OCD or being that dialed in on certain things. One of the best movies I've watched recently and recently being 2 years, is Richie McCaw's movie Chasing Great. It's about the All Black legend and the captain for the All Blacks, the New Zealand rugby team. And before game, he sits down with his game diary, more or less, and writes down, we're playing in this field. The corner here is a little bit wet. And we're playing with this ref. The ref is known for taking penalties or calling this, blah, 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 et cetera, et cetera. And you know, he goes through his game already and he knows what to aim for and where, what he can get away with and what he has to look out for before every game, the day before, and he writes it down.
And that's I think you'll find that trait, and obviously you say a little more in coaches, but especially in the football greats, like let's say Sir Alex Ferguson or even Arsene Wenger, you know, for the longest time, that's what they did. They had all this knowledge, you know, that vault of knowledge, and that's it gave them a slight advantage. But that's what it comes down to, right? Slight advantages. So that's how you become the best. There's no other way. And you know what? It takes so much work, though. You know, the guy that's putting all this for the All Blacks, that took a lot of work, man. That took like a lot of work. And I don't think not everyone's willing to do it. So that's something that Caulfield does quite well.
And if you do that for sports, you're going to be able to do it in business or whatnot. So you're going to succeed in whatever you go for in life anyway.
Yeah. And I think one of the biggest things that plagues a lot of young players is that, listen, if you got drafted in the first round, you're a damn good player. You've been the best player on your team your entire life. You've gotten every single minute. You've gotten every single power play. You've got all the best line mates. Your dad was probably your coach for about 10 years. And then you hit the NHL and you realize, I was almost swore there. Holy shenanigans. Holy shnikes. I'm not that good. Like, it's kind of like if you're the smartest kid in your class and you go to high school, you're getting there and you go to university, you realize I'm not the smartest kid anymore. So it takes that level of effort. Caulfield is already the best at every level and he wants to go up that next round. So I think that's something that a lot of young guys that have coasted on their talent.
Yeah, but don't you think because he's always been the shortest guy, he's always been the guy that people say like, oh, well, I mean, you won't make it on the next level because then you're going to be too small. You're going to be, you will have to find something else to do basically on the ice or like even, you know, just to be a hockey player at high level. I think he's always had that chip on his shoulder just because of that. So every time that when he has moved up a level, I think that he has kind of known that he needed to improve. If we compare him to like another Canadian prospect, for example, we had a podcast about Joshua Roy, for example, who was selected in this last draft. And he was the first pick of the Q draft 2019, obviously. And I think it's more difficult when you've always been the star and you have everything going for you and you have the right size and you have everything looks great. You are kind of the quarterback of the high school football team, right? You have the size. But if you're 5'7" and you're a hockey player, everyone is always going to say like, well, you are not going to make it at the next level. And you always have that chip on your shoulder and you always have the effort to compete if you want to make it. I think Alex DeBrincat would probably say the same thing.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And when it comes to Caulfield, he's gotten that thrown in his face constantly, right? Because it hasn't just been a matter of like, you know, obviously you're too small, blah, blah, blah. This kid's always been able to score. But then remember everyone saying it's because of Hughes that he scored? Yeah. Like it's the only reason was because of Hughes. And then right away he started scoring without Hughes. And they're like, wow, he can only score in the power play. Or right away he started scoring even strength goals. Well, now it's because his schedule is too easy. And he went out and he beat a bunch of really good teams. He dominated in the AHL, dominated the NHL. Yeah, I think that's part of it too. He will never say that. He'll never admit it. And I've tried to pull that out of him. Like, are you trying to prove the doubters wrong? And he's more in the mentality, and I love this. It's small difference, but it makes all the difference, is that he doesn't want to prove everyone else wrong. He wants to prove the Canadians right. For, you know, because to him, that is the ultimate thing, is that they showed some faith in him. So he's rewarding them. And I think what I also love in his case is that they were going to slow play him. I don't know. You guys saw in the playoffs, they were going to slow play him like they do everyone else. And you know what? That's kind of normal. But he forced their hands, and to force a club like the Canadians, I think takes a ridiculous amount of talent. And it takes a certain kind of personality too. So I'm with you, Anton. You know, a lot of these guys, again, have never faced a challenge, and when it comes down to them, it's really rough to deal with it. But
it's difficult to start. Like, you know, if you've been the star and then start to have challenges when you're 18.
it's okay. It's akin to, and I'm going to use myself as an example. I was always really smart in school growing up, obviously got lucky because I had two very intelligent parents. So I acquired a lot of decent DNA in the, you know, in the IQ department, which is, you know, obviously a terrible test, but you know, you got tested young when you're a kid and you got put in all these advanced classes, and I aced them my entire life. I aced them. I didn't have to try my entire life. I didn't have to try high school. Didn't have to try, skipped all my classes, literally like 90% of my classes, got into universities, full scholarships, blah, blah, blah. And then I realized the biggest issue here was that I never learned how to try. It's great to be the best at something your entire life and coast off natural talent, but unless you're like top 1% in the world, which very few people are, it's actually not a boon to be naturally good. You never learn how to take those steps, and then when those steps come, you're so afraid to actually step up. I'm like, I dropped out of university, you know. I was like, I have no idea how what to do here. I'm not ready. I got through my intelligence. Everyone always told me I was smart, but mm-hmm. never told me I had to try. And then once you start trying, then you actually have to reset it at the beginning. So I think that's one of the issues that happens with a lot of these guys, is that they never had to try. They never had to try, and then life slaps you down. Life, you know, it's a nice little reminder. Hey buddy, like, we're putting all the pools together, so you're no longer that big fish in a small pool. You're a minnow. You're a minnow in an ocean. Good luck trying to survive. And when it comes to hockey, a lot of these guys, they're, you know, I think it's very smart to talk about it in the sense that it's an ocean, because even the guys that get drafted, let's say, what, 270 or whatever, there's still another 1,000 guys who are fighting for those jobs with those other prospects. So, yeah, having to learn how to try hard, even if you have the talent, is one of the best things that you can do. And I think, like you said, that helped Caulfield advance to the next level.
Now, I can only agree with your experience, Mark, because I never had to study.
Nope, me neither.
I passed all the tests. I never needed anything more than a pass anyway, except for a few courses at university, which I really, really wanted to ace, and I aced them. And then I got into a PhD program at University College London, which is one of the top 20 universities in the world. And yeah.
It's a reality check.
I didn't know how to study.
Neither did I. I didn't know how to study either. And then that's the curse of being
gifted.
It back. Yeah. And again, it's going to sound so arrogant. I'm saying that I like screwed up because of this, because I didn't ever learn to work. I'm not trying to say that like I'm so smart. In a sense, I was actually pretty stupid, because I assumed that I could just coast my intelligence my whole life. And then life bitch slapped me real well. So a lot of these guys, that's that realization. A lot of them fall to the wayside. Cole Caulfield will never fall to the wayside, because he's obsessed with getting better. Even though he had the best shot outside of the NHL, and right now, I'd argue, guys, top five shot in the NHL right now, easily. He's still going to, right now, he's working on making it better. He doesn't want it to be top five. He wants it to be, you know, to quote KRS1, number 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. You know, that's what Cole Caulfield wants.
And yeah, obviously, that's... I need to push out also the fact that you mentioned also Matthews. And I've had the privilege when he played in Europe. And it was my first assignment in for Ice and Price, really, in Europe. And
Zurich, right?
I went to Zurich to see Martin Riwai and also Matthews, because he was playing there. And he scored two goals, more or less, from the same angle. I was sitting straight from the puck into the
it doesn't look like he tries,
and it was, he made it look so simple.
That's why I asked Caulfield once. I'm like, hey, I'm not trying to insult you, but it doesn't look like you're trying. Him and I don't know if you watch Sean Farrell play for the USHL Chicago Steel. They don't try. And I'm like, explain that to me. And he's like, what do you mean? Obviously, I'm trying. Like, he took it a little, he didn't take it harsh, but he's like, well, obviously, I'm trying. I'm like, I know that, but it looks like you're only giving 20% power. And he's like, well, if I would up that to 90% power, I would lose 30% accuracy. You know, I would lose 40% speed of release. And therefore, my goals would go in 20, you know, like, I was like, oh, shit. Okay. So that's actually part of it. You know, this idea that you need to whip it. If you just use the physics of, first of all, these sticks are, you know, it's space engineering. So that's why it looks like they're not trying. They could force it a little harder. But these guys know that the sweet spot isn't necessarily at 100% power. And that's something Cole Caulfield is quite aware of. And
they'll Shea Weber that.
Well, that's a different generation, right?
Yeah.
You know, that generation, they grew up playing with wooden sticks, because I know it's my generation. You know, it's funny because I'm always talking about, oh, Shea Weber is such an old man. I'm older than him. But we grew up with Sherwoods. And I'll tell you right now, have you guys ever, like, I don't want to sound like too much of an old man, but have you guys ever skated around with a wooden stick?
Yeah.
No.
The only
okay, like the good old that. Sherwood there, like a CCM, like lumber there. No?
Yeah. No.
I have.
Patrick has, and I'll tell you right now, it grows your arm muscles. I'll tell you that right now. They're better for backhands. They weigh 1,000 pounds, and they made hockey a lot less fun. But that's why, you know, he did grow up with a whole different. That's why I'm so excited to see the new generation of kids. I think when I see Sean Farrell take that shot, I'm like, oh my God, this is going to become standard. It reminds me of when Georges St-Pierre jumped into MMA and he was the first hybrid fighter. You know, he was destroying wrestlers. He was destroying boxers. He was destroying jiu-jitsu, you know, and there weren't that many martial arts that were in UFC back then. But because he was the first hybrid. And then 10 years later, you realize, oh crap, like he was just the first. It wasn't that he was that good of an athlete. He was, like, I mean, arguably one of the best athletes of all time for the men. Canadian women are generally much better at sports, but what happened was he was just one of the first, right? So then now all the new fighters have that hybrid style. And I think we're going to be seeing that with hockey players. These kids are watching Austin Matthews. Like when we were coming into the league, or a 20-year-old was coming into the league 20 years ago, they were talking about guys that were 38. Now, when guys come into the league at the draft, they're already talking about Caulfield. They're talking about, like, oh, I watched Mitch Marner. You know, I'm like, what? At the draft, you know how many guys mentioned Nick Suzuki as their favorite player at the draft? Like that, like Nick Suzuki can even, he can just rent a car in Nevada. Like that's new, brand new. And these guys that got drafted 5 years younger than him, not even 3 years younger, are saying.
They could be his little brother, basically. Like, yeah, his exactly. little brother is literally 1 year older than the guys who were drafted now. Or like
exactly. They're saying, I grew up watching him. I grew up watching him. So now I think that the younger guys have a little bit of an appreciation. But so we're going to be seeing a lot more of those elite shots, I think, coming up. It's not going to be guys just like Caulfield and Matthews. You're going to be seeing it from a lot of players.
But it's just so fascinating what you were talking about before as well, about Caulfield always wanting to get better in, like, you know, it's not just his shot. Now, I remember like hearing last spring. Yeah. Hearing last spring, for example, that, well, he wasn't maybe... He wanted to compete on the NHL level already after his freshman season, obviously, just because, of course, he would probably have been ready already last year. But the Canadiens wanted to, like, make him take his time and, you know, not rush him into anything and everything. So he had to go back to a considerably worse Badgers team where he didn't have Alex Turcotte, where he didn't have, like, a lot of the guys who were, he was playing with the year before. But just the responsibility he took for that team and how he thrived in that setting after, you know, kind of a maybe a little bit slower start. But then he just, like, he felt so much more complete as a player after that year when he was actually coming over to the Canadiens, because, like,
he was pissed about that year too. By the way, I was so excited. I'm like, hey man, you won all these awards as a rookie. You set all these records. And he's like, I don't care. We finished last in our division. And that's why he was so, you know, and I think we talk about things that are tangible and intangible, but his desire to want to win for his team is something that I think is contagious. We can't put a value on it, but don't tell me when you're around a guy like Cole Caulfield, that's 20 years old, that's won everywhere he's gone. He's so excited to, like, every minute of ice time to him is gold. You could see it in the pregame. He was like their emotional support Hobie Baker winner, you know, like he was so excited. And that is contagious. I talked to a lot of players and a lot of player wives, and they're like, man, they love being around Cole Caulfield. Like, this guy is just such a ball of positive energy, and they want to be better just to, you know, just to make it better for Cole Caulfield. So it's not just him that he's improving. I think it improves everyone around him.
Looking at obviously the playoff run, and we all know the goals he scored there, but what are reasonable expectations for him going forward?
Well, I think one of the things we saw, obviously, in the playoffs, and again, we, just to go back to what Anton was saying, this is another thing he wanted to improve, was his defense. You know, we saw a guy there that, and he knew, he's like, I don't care how many goals I scored, I'm going to get dumped out of the NHL if I can't play defense. And he's right. It might not be the right way to approach coaching, but he's right as a player. He's smart enough to recognize that. And also one of the things that he really worked on, but he was never that bad. Okay, first of all, I'm going to say two things that people were saying. He can't be a playmaker and he can't skate. Now, the skating thing became such a, like, it was first, oh, he can't, you know, you guys know how it goes with the rumors around draft. It's like, okay, he's not a great skater. 2 weeks later, oh, he can't skate. 3 weeks later, like, this guy's a peg leg pirate that roams the open seas and steals booty from privateers there. You know what I mean? Like, he's missing a leg, essentially. And we saw He's not the best skater in the world, but he's so elusive. That's one of the things we saw in the playoffs. This little bugger is elusive. He's, you know, I don't know how to describe it, but holy, it's like watching a pigeon walk right under a bus, you know, a bus that's turning in downtown there. But the pigeons, you look this up, they see life and like they see about 10,000 frames a second. Well, maybe not 10,000, but they see life in slow motion. So it's easier for them to deke in and around those tires. We think, oh my God, they're going to get crushed. They move out of the way every time. Cole Caufield has some of that same ability, except for the buses are big lumbering defensemen trying to hit him. He's that little pigeon on the ice that sees everything a little faster. And he's just so elusive. We saw it. He's hard to hit. But the biggest thing for me in the playoffs was the playmaking, right, guys? Like, I mean, he was more of a playmaker than a goal scorer. Now, he got unlucky. He should have scored probably 2 to 3 more goals if we're not even counting posts. But, man, I think the most amazing thing about his playoff run was him announcing to the world, like, I'm not just a goal scorer. I'm not just a goal scorer. And this is something that his coach told me a while ago. I completely forget. It was for the U.S. National Development Team. I spoke to him. What was his name? Anyways, and he's saying, you know, don't count this guy. John Wroblowski. He's like, this kid is a playmaker. He's like, Hughes took all the attention. He's like, I would say right now, Caufield's as good of a playmaker as Hughes is. And I was like, really? Can I quote you on that? He's like, no, you cannot. But he's like, watch him in the NHL. He's so smart that he knows his pass opens up lanes. By the way, Patrick, I see you tweeting right now. he's so smart that he opens up lanes and he can use that to his advantage and become an elite playmaker. And I think we saw, to me, that's the biggest, most shocking, well, not shocking, but encouraging thing was his playmaking.
You mentioned me tweeting, so everyone knows what I was tweeting about. It's actually that Sweden just beat Spain in football. So, yeah.
Tisk, tisk, tisk. What can I say?
Yeah. Sometimes things happen and that shouldn't happen. And this is probably one of them.
At what level, though? At what level did they beat?
It's the world qualifiers.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Huh. But Spain... Well,
it's old news. When this comes out, it's old news and everyone will already know that Sweden is a top team in the world in football.
Oh, obviously, and which team are we going to play in the final now? That's the only thing that matters.
Well, and don't forget, you know what's pretty crazy here? And I love how we're going to get off topic, but Canada's still in the running to qualify for
Canadian women are about to qualify for the men, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, you know, it's funny because we see that. What's the name of that? The rapist there that Man United signed there. Ronaldo. You know, everyone's talking about highest goal scorer. Highest goal scorer just finally won her gold medal. And I'll tell you what I found so fascinating here is that.
I don't know about this, Mark. I'm hearing there's some connection problems. Can't hear you.
Can you not hear me?
I was joking because you beat Sweden, obviously.
Oh, yeah. Oh, okay. Mm. Well, I guess you shouldn't have tackled Sinclair. Actually, I think she might have gone down a little bit. But what was so cool there was that the girls that scored the goals all grew up watching Sinclair. Like, imagine having that kind of impact. I think you could say right now, right up there with Marta. You know, you could probably even say she's better than Marta. Hard to say. Either way, Sinclair has to be recognized as
I'm going to defend Marta here on the basis that what she had to struggle in respect from the Brazilian man.
Yes, absolutely. Oh my God. Now, you know, she was kind of setting the stage, I wouldn't say before Sinclair, but no, you're absolutely right. And especially in South America where there's a little more bravado. Marta's still younger, I believe. But no, she was better at a certain age than Sinclair was. But I'll say this right now. You know, when we talk about the best players, we should be saying they're the Marta of this or the Sinclair of this, you know what I mean? As opposed to saying, obviously
they're great individuals, both of them. We don't have to,
yeah, absolutely. But they should be recognized as amongst the best athletes of all time. You know, that's the way I would look at it. But anyhow, let's get back to talking about another guy that maybe one day will perhaps be recognized at Christine Sinclair level or Marie-Philippe Poulin level, maybe. And that's Cole Caufield.
You touched on the side where there's room for improvement, but one of the questions is really the chemistry he's found with Nick Suzuki. Is that going to be the huge for the foreseeable future, or will they drive each other further and more towards the top?
Well, yeah, there's always, it's going to be mutually beneficial for those two. I think when we look at the NHL now, this idea of having like the when there was Brendan Gallagher and Tatar and Dano, it was a great trio, as we'd say in French, a really nice combination of players. But in reality, there's more duos in the NHL. You know, and if you go way back, you know, even though it's a Yeri Curry, Wayne Gretzky type of thing, there's always been duos in the NHL, you know, Lemieux, Jagr, and then you can throw in a third. And I think that's kind of what you're going to get here with Caulfield and Suzuki, is just a power duo. And listen, there's a reason all these players, it's not just Caulfield that loves playing with Suzuki. Everyone loves playing with Suzuki because he's just so darn smart. I won't say that Caulfield is as smart as him. However, Caulfield, I think he doesn't get enough credit, is also a very smart player. And if he wasn't, he wouldn't get along well chemistry-wise with Nick Suzuki. You know, they always say it's hard to play with really good players. I don't think it is if you're a smart player. I don't necessarily think you need the talent level to play with a guy like Sidney Crosby, but you have to have the processor. You know, you have to have that computer between your two ears that processes everything at a high level. That way you can anticipate. I think those two anticipate themselves at an elite level. And that's what makes them so good. Also, they have fun playing together. But the chemistry, in my mind, is built on intelligence more than skill when it comes
I was going to ask, because that was an interesting take of you. Do you think that's the problem that the Oilers have had with McDavid for years, that they can't find anyone who can process the game the way that he does?
Is that a subtle jab at Zach Cassian? Or no?
Well, a subtle jab.
Milan Lucic, or you know.
Yeah, but I was just gonna say, like, because, like, as you say it, like, you don't have to have the talent level, but you have to have like the process speed, and you have to be smart enough. And I'm just wondering, like, because the Oilers have just thrown wingers at McDavid and Draisaitl, and it's just like it doesn't stick. It doesn't work, really. And I'm just wondering, like, if the Canadians have just hit the you know, the proper ignition here with Suzuki and Caulfield coming through basically the same time.
I'd love to see Yamamoto play a little bit with McDavid, but, you know, I'm looking at their stats. Do you guys know who their highest scoring winger was last year?
Puljujärvi.
Yeah. Wow. I was going to ask if it was James Neal.
Right. No, I think that's obviously, I think when it comes down to it, and for the most part, the Canadians tend to draft intelligent players. And I think that's one of the assets that I think scouts are going to be looking for more and more. And it's obviously very difficult to. I asked recently, because I was talking to Riley Kidney's coach, Mario Zirashi, and I'm like, what does that mean when you talk about hockey IQ? What does that mean? And he's like, well, when it comes down to it, it's, you know, let's say you're driving down a street. And this isn't what he says. This is how I interpret. You're driving down the street. Your brain sees about 10,000 signs, right? Telling you what to do at all times. And your brain is processing. We don't realize it, but our brains are amazing computers. They're processing at all times. There's a reason when we go to bed that we stay up. It's because we finally stop staring at a screen for a minute. And it gives our brain to actually like, okay, what just happened all day? You know, our brain is just catching up and processing. Now, when it comes down to a guy like Riley Kidney, I said, what makes him smart? And he says, well, you know, he makes the right decisions all the time. That's what it is, that they can trust him. Okay, not all the time, but like a 90%, which is huge. Because when it comes down to hockey, it's all it is that it's the variables. You know, none of them are, what's the word for a constant? None of them are constants. So what he's saying is, obviously it's anticipation. It's being able to know, you know, what I should do right in the decision, but it's making high level decisions that pay off more than not. And that, I think, obviously, Connor McDavid is just a freak of nature. Like, I don't know if he, obviously, he's super smart, but it's hard to tell, like, if it's just intelligence. However, I would look at it this way. If you go back, no offense to Philip Broberg, but if the Oilers, who had the opportunity to draft Caulfield, would have drafted him, I think I honestly think he could get to 100 goals playing with Connor McDavid. I know that's crazy to say. But if there's one guy that could do it, it'd be Connor McDavid and Cole Caulfield. Think of that. Think of those two together.
Yeah.
I'll be honest, I'm one of the guys that are very low on Broberg, though. So you
appreciate. Well, I remember I spoke to some Swedish people. I'm like, what about Broberg? And they're like, classic North Americans overrating. So, like, I've noticed when I speak to a lot of people in Sweden, they're like, no, not him. Don't draft him. No. Like, I know you guys love coming in and getting super excited about some of our prospects, but they're like, no, don't touch Broberg. All that to be said is that right now the Oilers could have Cole Caulfield for free playing on an entry level contract with Connor McDavid. Wouldn't that be crazy?
It would.
Honestly, wouldn't, like, I bet you could get 80 goals, right? Like, I know 100 sounds like a lot, but
82 goals. Yeah, you could get one a game, definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah, it wouldn't be impossible. That's the thing. Like, I mean, it just sounds like, I mean, it would be a lethal combination. And we saw the kind of goal scoring numbers that, yeah, it was at USNTDP level and everything, but we saw the kind of goals that Caulfield put up with Jack Hughes as a partner. Right?
Who's like, he's okay.
Yeah, but... he's okay. And we've not seen Jack Hughes perform at an admirable level at the NHL yet. If he had...
if he only had a Caulfield, eh?
Yeah. That's the thing. Like, I started to wonder, like, in the first season, when Jack Hughes wasn't performing up to par in the NHL, obviously, you know, it's normal as a rookie coming in and struggling and everyone's kind of like...
He wasn't elite like a McDavid or a Matthews, right?
No, exactly. Yeah, but there was all this discussion about, you know, was he going to go first or was going to be Kapokako? And then you saw both of them struggling.
Yeah.
And actually Kirby
especially kind of, really struggled.
Yeah, exactly. But then I was just like, I started to think like, well, what if we've just been wrong all this time? What if it's been Cole Caulfield actually driving the line and Jack Hughes needing someone like Caulfield on the line? Because we always assume that the winger needs the center to produce. But what if the center actually needs the winger who actually understands him in such a way that he can, I mean, if Cole Caulfield is open and he can score, then there is always someone that Jack Hughes can pass. And that's the thing. Like, you know, we always kind of overvalue, but you know, we tend to want to value centers higher at all times.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. But when it comes to duos, you need that. Okay. One thing that I'll say here, and I'd love to go through my records and go find it, because I was working for a former employer at the time, but when Cole Caulfield got drafted, John Werblowski, who I don't know if you guys remember correctly, but the U.S. National Development Squad, like they had something like 12 guys going the first round. Yeah. Right? I mean, it was ridiculous.
Caulfield was like number 6 or 7.
Yeah. Like he came right after Cam York there.
The only thing I remember from that draft is the Philadelphia fans thinking they're getting Caulfield.
And then, from the U.S. National Development, they're like, woo, life is great. They're like, Cam York. Like, oh, was it? Yeah, it was Cam York right before, and then there was Spencer Knight before that. There was Matthew Boldy, who I think is going to be really good. There was Zegras, who's also going to be very good. Tsukut, not that great. And obviously, Jack Hughes. All this to say, John Werblowski totally interrupted our scrum, which a lot of the uptight, update journalists, who self-important journalists, who a lot of them are our colleagues, and I'll tell this to their face, they think they're way too important for this. They were so pissed off that this guy was trying to push through, and we were about to witness one of the most amazing moments, is that he just grabbed Caulfield and he hugged him so hard. He's like, I'm so fucking happy. I'm so bleeping happy for you, man. Like, you're gonna be a star, is what he just told me. He's like, I'm so, and he didn't do this for anyone else, but he went right through after all his guys got drafted, went straight to Cole Caulfield. So I, being, you know, I didn't want to fight with a crowd to ask these terrible questions about to Caulfield, you know, the generic stuff, like how long will it be until you learn French, that kind of garbage. So I went to John Werblowski and I'm like, why were you so happy? He's like, watch him. He's going to be the best of the bunch, man. He's going to be the best of the bunch. I'm telling you right now. I'm like, yeah, but he needs a guy like Hughes, eh? And he looks at me, he's like, well, I'll tell you this right now. Go look at those goals and tell me who was more important in all of them. I'll tell you right now, more than 50% of the time, Cole Caulfield started those plays. Yes, Hughes did the last pass, but Caulfield was someone that starts. He said he doesn't just finish the plays. He starts the plays. You need a guy in the middle to help that. But Cole Caulfield is not just a goal scorer. He drives the offense. And I think that's why Werblowski was so happy to see him go top 15, because he knew this kid has all the potential in the world. Like, and it's been hard, right? We don't want to be too excited about him, but man, like,
he makes it difficult for us not to be excited.
You know what I mean? Yeah, he didn't just force the Habs to put him in the lineup in the playoffs, which is unheard of. I mean, we saw what happened to Romanov, and I was okay with that. That's normal for guys that age. But right now, like, you know, maybe Zegras has a chance, Trevor Zegras, but the Calder Trophy, people are giving it to him already, and it's not because they're exaggerating. Like, this kid has been dominant, and his underlying numbers, fantastic as well.
But it's also so fun, because I remember draft night 2019, and my friend was visiting me in Rome at the time, and he's a Rangers fan, and they had the second overall pick, and he was really excited about that because they were going to get Hughes or Kako, and then they got Kako, and you know, he was happy about that. But then, you know, I started saying, like, what if Cole Caulfield drops to 15, where Montreal was going to pick?
Right.
And he was just like, yeah, that's not going to happen. And just like, you know, pick after pick went by, and Broberg went, and Victor Soderstrom went, and Boldy went, and Spencer Knight went. And all of a sudden,
winner next year went, because it's going to be Morris Seider.
Yeah, yeah.
I was just gonna say Seider, but he's pretty darn good. But Sukhut, yeah, in my opinion, Sukhut went fifth, and you're like, what's going on here?
Yeah, but it were a lot of surprises. We weren't expecting Kirby Dach to go at three. Then he's been great. Like,
I was expecting Byram to maybe go at three, but yeah
I was expecting Turco to go at three, but you know, that was a miscalculation. But then it was just like, when the Canadians got Caulfield at 15, and like, I was expecting them as well to maybe wanting Cam York. If they had the selection of Cam York,
I think they might have gone for York.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, they wanted a defense.
And also, let's keep this in mind, Anton. Sorry to cut you off, but players were, or fans, and I think management were kind of sick of picking that young, small guy that was skilled. They wanted, you know what I mean? But you just couldn't. Like, I think the Habs, it's because they fell in his lap. Ideally, I don't know if they wanted a Caulfield, because again, yeah, he's small. And the Habs had a bit of a size issue and a bit of a size insecurity. That being said, I mean, you know, he stood taller than almost everyone in the playoffs. And I think that says a lot about Cole Caulfield.
Yeah, but that was the fun thing as well. When I sat there, like, on draft night, I think I was the happier of us too. He had, like, my friend had just, you know, got the second pick in the draft and everything. But like, it just felt like such a blessing to get that kind of a goal scorer who had just put up 72 goals. And just like, this is only because he's 5'7", obviously. But then we had just seen Alex DeBrincat put up huge numbers in Chicago as well. So it's just like, well, you know, like, and obviously you couldn't know, but it was just, the feeling was just there that, well, this could actually be something special, because at 15, normally, like, who went to 15?
Normally you get like a 50% shot of him being an okay NHL player at 15.
Exactly.
You know, like, maybe that's high, probably.
Like,
high.
You can get a Jacob Sporil at 15, or like, that draft, it was actually, I think it was Barzal who went to 15, so that was a pretty good pick. But
yeah,
like, it's normally a crapshoot when you come down to, like, in the middle of the
it's
first 50, round.
50, and,
yeah,
more
exactly.
Or less.
Yeah, but even if you get 50-50, even if you get like a good NHL player, it doesn't normally turn out to be something, you know, that can be changing for your franchise.
Yeah, exactly.
Like,
whereas
you get a top
Cole
four
Caulfield is a game breaker. He's a game changer that the Canadians have been looking for since Guy Lafleur. I'll make this quite clear. The Canadians have never even, I'll say this even more, and I know that I'm hyping them so much, but Guy Lafleur did not have Cole Caulfield's talent. Obviously, it was a different league, a different era, you know, 50 years ago, really, now, if we look at it. But the Canadians have been looking for a guy with this kind of game-breaking talent for the longest time, and he fell into their laps because of everyone else's inability to take advantage of a market inefficiency. I think that's really what it comes down to.
We speak about this, but you have to give credit to Detroit that started all of this.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.